Okay. Think about your early life.
Okay, my name originally was Thelma Emblem, and I'm now Thelma Godkin, of course. And I was born right here in Nanaimo. My father also was born in Nanaimo, and my grandfather jumped ship here many years ago. And I lived right here in Salt Air, grew up right around here. And I just have to stop for a minute now and think. A desire that I didn't want to do girls' work, and my father said, well, we'll send you on to university, but I had no desire to do that, and he used to take me out, and he'd cross-cut saw a log block off for wood, and I would finish it up for him with my own cross-cut saw, which I learned to use, and I hauled wood with a truck and learned to back up before I learned to go ahead almost. Well, then, when I graduated from school, of course, I had to go to work, so I started working in a little restaurant on the Malahat, which was all right, but not very much pay. And finally, my father said to me, I'll get you a job in the mill, because at that time, they were getting shorthanded in the mill because of the war taking all the young fellows away. So sure enough, he got me into the sawmill, and I went into the planing mill, where I was what they call a racker, where I sorted different size lumber up until it got enough, and then we'd drop it down. It would be tied, ready to go out for shipment. And I also worked on a big bandsaw. One day, I just about cut my hand off, so I stopped that, and finally, I didn't like the noise. I didn't like the kind of men that worked in the sawmill, and I decided that was enough of that. So I quit. So that was kind of horrifying to my family, because you just didn't quit jobs. You didn't at all. So I was swimming down at this lagoon right here down where I lived, and they had a big log dump there at that time, which is all since gone. And the guy said to me, they knew me, they said, hey, Thelma, how would you like to go working in the woods? And I laughed, and I said, oh, okay, because I like that. And so I did. I went up as a whistle punk, and I worked for 5 years in the woods. Thoroughly enjoyed it, and we would leave here about 5 o'clock, no, about 6:30, I guess, not 5, about 6:30 in the morning, and we'd travel, well, it was a long, long way up into the mountains, and there I would start being whistle punk. And the very first day that I worked up there, I was coming down, we used to leave our lunch down at the landing, as we call it, foolishly. Anyway, I was coming down the mountainside, and 2 feet jumping down the, oh, steep, down together, and a stick went up my pant and leg, and of course, down I crashed in this great big hole. Well, everybody came roaring over to see if I was hurt, and I was really shook up, and I couldn't let on that I wasn't. I'm fine, I said, and come staggering down the mountain, really out of breath. And I saw ever so many things. One day we went up there, and we saw, I didn't know what they were. I thought they were big police dogs, but they were 2 big wolves, and they're really large. And we used to go up above the clouds, and we'd look over toward Vancouver, and it'd be just like you could get out and walk on the clouds. It was just beautiful early in the morning, and I guess that's what I liked, because in my later life, I'm now an artist and enjoy the scenery. Eventually, there were, I think it was four of us all together, 3 other women and myself, and one of them was she was quite a bit older than we were, and she was very attached to the man that graded the lumber, and if we dare talk to him, she just got really hostile. It was quite funny, actually. I didn't like the noise there. I didn't like the dirty air. You were cooped inside all the time, and that wasn't my thing. I like the outside. I'd rather battle with mosquitoes than with sawdust. And the men, they would tell you a very subtle, nasty little jokes, which didn't turn me on very much, and then they go away and laugh like the dickens. Well, I didn't have to have that, and that was one of the reasons that I quit, that they were more suggestive, I guess, is the word, to a young girl. It wasn't very nice.
Were they hostile to women coming in?
No, they didn't seem to be hostile. I didn't feel that at all. In fact, there were some of them were very, very nice, and they knew my father very well because he was a well-known chap, and maybe they treated me better than they would have if I were just an unknown person. But having grown up in the area and had lots to do with a lot of the chaps, I knew them before I went into the mill. And at that time, there was a different attitude because of the lack of manpower there. And I think that was okay. I never missed any work. I never was sick or anything on the job. But I remember the first day I come home from the mill, we had been running yellow cedar, and if you've ever smelled yellow cedar, it's very, very strong. And I came home, I was exhausted because of the newness of the job, and the noise really was destroying. And you didn't wear those big ear things like they wear nowadays, you know, they wear those. Well, I come home and I went to bed after a bath, and I said to Mom, oh, I'm so tired, I got to go to bed. And I got into bed, and my mother had taken the sheets out of the cedar chest, and here all night long I slept in these cedars. That was quite funny, really. But that was... So then I was The pay was all right for a girl in the mill, I guess. It was the lowest paid job, I suppose, but I was happy to have it.
Were men and women separated by job categories and pay in the mill?
No. Don't remember that, no. Because there was other guys doing the same job as, you know, we were all doing the same, never even thought about things like that.
Did you get equal pay to them?
As far as I know, yeah. Never thought about it, you see. I was just one of the guys, and that's all I was. We had to wear things on our hair, and I rebelled about that. I wasn't going to wear things on my hair because I also had my hair cut short. So they just gave up telling me that I should have a hairnet on because I'd rather quit than wear that.
The other women who worked in the mill, were they also young women?
No, just the other, two of us were the same age. The other one was a bit older, and then the other one was that woman that was kind of envious. She was more quite a bit older than we were, at least I would say about 20 years or more, at least older than we were. Yeah, she was. She was of a foreign nationality. I don't know what nationality, but she wasn't. She didn't like us.
What were the working hours like and the conditions? Was it dangerous working in the mill?
The place where I nearly cut my hand was a great big bandsaw, and that was a dangerous place. Oh, yeah, it could be dangerous, but where I was mostly, though, you had to watch out because lumber could fly around and hit you in the face and that. You never wore any protection. Now they wear glasses and they wear hard-toed shoes. We never wore anything like that. Nobody did. Mm-hmm. So you didn't. I guess some of the guys wore, I don't even think they wore hard hats then. See, that's a long time ago, isn't it? Then you didn't have all the safety regulations. Nobody seemed to get very hurt, though, in the mill.
How did you feel like comparing that job to having been a waitress?
I preferred working in the mill to being a waitress. I mind I always liked people, but I was home, and I liked to be home. When I was a waitress, I was away from home, and I liked to be home. And the hours at the mill were better than waitress because you had split shift then, and you had to get up early and work for a while, and then you had the afternoon off, and then you'd have to go back at night. And I liked the straight through, and then you had your... It seems to me, didn't we work Saturdays in those days, too?
I think you did.
I think we did, too. It seemed like a long time we worked.
Were you heavily supervised? Was there a lot of supervision?
Mm-mm. No, you did your job. You had to do your job. If you didn't, the whole stuff piled, all this lumber would pile up in front of you, and everybody stopped, and then, of course, you'd be the one that caused this, so naturally your pride wasn't going to let you do that.
Were the women able to keep up with
you? Oh, sure. No problem.
And were there different races or ethnic groups or nationalities?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Were there any conflicts around that, other than the women who...
No. In those days, we were very crude and called them bohunks, and that isn't really very nice, but that's what everybody did. And, of course, I didn't do as much thinking as I have done since I've got older. And we weren't... Yeah, I guess we didn't associate with some of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was it unionized?
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Had the union been in there for a long time? Or?
This I can't tell you. I really don't know. You'd have to look up in the records, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And did you have responsibilities at home when you were living at home and working, like doing housework, helping your mother?
Well, sure. We had a little farm and cows, and if something happened, I'd have to pitch in and help at home, too. But I didn't pay very much board. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because of that, But you were a family member, and you were expected to take part in your family's affairs, too.
Was that difficult to work and also...
No, I didn't find I was strong and young.
Okay. And did most of the people in the mill work live in the same community?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you all sort of associated outside of the mill as well?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If we went to dances, it would be the same. Some mm-hmm. kids would come up from Duncan, but mostly you'd know them all.
Mm-hmm. Did that create a sort of sense of community or solidarity?
I think so. Although there's always, I always lived in halfway between Chemainus and Ladysmith. So that my affiliations were more with Chemainus, but I went to school in Ladysmith. But there was always a resentment between Chemainus and Ladysmith, which, strangely to say, is true to this day. Still on like that, yeah. So it's kind of, it was kind of neat being halfway between.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In terms of the union, you became a shop steward. Mm-hmm. What made you decide to do that?
Well, I guess I thought at that time it was a thing to do. They asked me if I would, and I accepted, because I was part of the gang.
Did you come out of a trade union background?
No, because, no. I had uncles that were involved in it quite seriously in the mining part of the world, but we were never too aware of it here. mine, there was strikes. The longshoremen were on strike, and it was quite a terrible thing that happened. You know, it seemed to be terrible, but I guess I didn't think about it. Like, I never thought about it.
Was your dad a logger, or was he?
My father was a he worked in the shop, in the machine shop.
And, okay, just around the union stuff, sort of getting back to that, when you say it was sort of the thing to do when you were one of the gang, was that because most of the people you worked with were involved or interested in the union?
Yeah, but you see, at that time, we were more involved in thinking about the war, and we were doing our job, so there was no really heavy union pressure put on. Because everything was going along fine, and we didn't, I never was involved in anything other than collecting dues and paying my own dues. As far as I was concerned, it didn't seem to bother, you know, I never, it's not something that really stands out in my mind.
Right, okay. How did the war affect people's attitudes towards work?
I think we were all willing to really work, really put forth, because at that time it was, there was a lot of, I shouldn't call it propaganda, but a lot of, well, I guess it was put on us like that. To the home front should keep up the war front. And I guess that was a feeling we had, because so many of my friends went to war and never came back, and this is the only way we could do our bit.
Right.
Excuse me.
And were there, in the mill, were there people there who were from the Labor Progressive Party and the CCF?
Oh, I guess so. But politics, I never was interested in politics at that time. I'm sorry to say that, but I wasn't. Mm-hmm. My family had discussions, but I never participated in that. Because when you're young like that, at that time, it didn't seem to be the thing. I don't know. I didn't have any involvement in that.
Right. So, when you began to work in the woods, did it take you a while to learn the kind of skills that were necessary to be whistle punk? What is a whistle punk doing? Start there.
Whistle punks are no longer that's a job that's gone by the boards long ago. In those days, it was you had a little thing like what you're holding in your hand almost, and it was this wire strung right out and attached to the machine, and you were the signal man, and you signaled your logs to go into the landing to be loaded on the trucks, and that's what your job was. And if they got a hang up, you would blow one whistle, and it would mean something to the engineer at the machine, and that's what it was. And it was they called it a bug, that thing you held in your hand. You just pressed it together and it made contact, and it blew a whistle at the and I guess because you were the low guy on the totem pole, you were called punk, you see, so it got to be a whistle punk.
Is that where people would start to work?
Yes, a lot of people, yeah, they'd start there, and then they'd gradually work up into be a chokerman, and then they'd go into rigging, slinging, and then they'd go on, and I have a son-in-law that's now just taken a falling. In those days, you didn't learn to be a faller, you just went in and worked, but now they teach you to be a faller. And in those days, there was no power saws, I worked for what you call a gypo outfit to start with, and gypo outfit is just a little small show, as they call it, and I can remember when we went up in the crummy in the morning up the logging road right up here, there was a bunch of little Chinese people lived in a little joint up there, and they'd come out and they'd have two or three straw hats on their heads and these crosscut saws over their back, and they'd walk down and these things would go up and down. They called them Swedish banjos or something like that, and that's what it was like in those days. It was really old way, and it's changed so much now. And we used to have a guy come up there. He was a policeman down here, and he'd go up there for his summer holidays to work in the woods. It was surprising, really, yeah. And we one time got an electrical storm up there, and being all the spartry with all these lines coming down, it was quite dangerous. We all, left the place, but nothing happened. But I saw the tops of the trees come down, and I saw kind of things like that. Saw a guy get his ankle broken running down a great big pile of logs.
Kind of attitudes you encountered in the woods towards you as a woman?
Yeah.
Men you worked with?
Okay. When I worked in the little gypo places, they were just treated me like their sister. They were really, really nice to me. And that's where I met my husband, who was very, extremely nice to me. And then after a while, I quit. I wonder why I quit. I can't remember why I quit, but anyway, I quit. And this chap from the head man in Chimanas came down, and he wanted me to work for Copper Canyon, which was a big camp, still working, as a matter of fact. So I went up there, and I said, oh, after a while, I said, all right, I'll go to work for you. And I worked on a really big machine up there. And most of the men would treat me just fine, but the odd guy would come along, and he'd be quite shocked to see the only girl there. And I could sense that he was going to say something nasty. You know, not nasty, but something out of the line a little bit. But he never did. I think the other guys, the attitude of the other men squelched him, and he treated me just beautiful, too, just like everybody else. And I never had any problems, ever. Mine, I never put myself into a position either. I always just was one of the guys, just one of the guys. Somebody asked me about going to the bathroom here a while ago, and I would just say to one of the chaps, I'd say, hey, will you take do a turn for me for a minute? I'm going over in the bush here. That's all I say. They never say anything. You just take a turn, and I go way over in the, behind some trees, and that would be the end of that. But I never had any problems. There was one, there was twins. They're Numi twins. They're well known in the area. I didn't know one from the other. I never ever did. One worked on a machine, and the other one was what we call the push, our push on our side. And he would never look at me. Never look at me, and he'd say, "Funk," and he'd say, "You make a fire." That's about all he'd ever say to me. And I'd go make a fire. Like sometimes we would be moving the machinery, and there was nothing for me to do, and that's what I'd have the fire for lunch. It was really, really nice.
Were they protective of you?
I think so. Mm-hmm. They looked after me. They always saw that I was okay. Yeah, yeah. And they never made me do any heavy work either. I was just a dumb old punk that used to string out the whistle wire and just sit there, you know, do the job. But I was alert. I never blew the wrong whistle, because sometimes you can blow the wrong whistle and you can really injure the men if you blow at the wrong time.
Yeah, I was going to ask a bit more about exactly where the whistle punk's work fits into the whole cycle of brokenness.
At that time, we would go into a setting and you would be yarding the logs into the machine, like, and I would work to the side, but I would go right along with the man on the side, and the rigging slinger would holler ho, and I would stop the rigging right at that place, and then he'd maybe tell me to move the rigging ahead slowly, and I would do that, or back slowly. There's signals for that, and I would do that, and he'd just tell me to stop. But you see, if there was a chap under a log and I did the wrong thing, the log could come down and crush him. So you had to be really, really aware of what you were doing. And that's why I think that I was asked to go to this big camp, because I had a reputation of being a faithful, alert person. Lots of the whistle punks, you could take a book and read there, but then you can't do that if you're going to do your job properly.
Someone told me, it was Mr. Whiskers told me, that you were the best and fastest whistle punk around.
I didn't know that, but I know that I was... I guess I was, because I liked it, and I liked the man, and I wouldn't want anything, I wouldn't want to be responsible. Mind, I know one time we were pulling a turn, as it's called, the engineer was pulling,
What is pulling a turn?
That's bringing the logs into the landing. That's the big main line with all your chokers and everything, and the log got hung up, a hang up, as they call it, behind a stump. And the engineer gave a good reef, and just as I blew stop and a rigging slinger hollered stop, and the whole top of the tree came down. Now, that was the fault of the man that went out to select the tree for the spar tree. See, in those days, you went out and took a standing tree as a spar tree. Now they have a steel spar that goes on the back of the truck. It's all completely different. But he got what was called a conky tree, because the thing was rotten and the whole thing came down. Well, we just got into such a dither, and all the crew, the rigging crew and everybody, ran into the machinery, and here these guys were coming out. Nobody was hurt. But then we had to shut down for a few days until we found a new spar tree, and we had to raise it, and he raised the spar tree. It's really interesting. And this is why I like to write the book, because there's so many things happened up there. And it's old-time logging from a woman's point of view, and it's so different, you know?
Right. What are some of the differences with how you would see it and how maybe some of the guys would see it? Would you be really concerned a lot with safety?
I think so. I think we were all aware of safety, though. We were all, when. But why did I like it? Because when I started working in the woods, my friends at that time who had graduated from school with me had gone to business college and all the things that people do, and they said to me, "What? You're going working in a sawmill? You know, oh, what a dumb job that is." And then when they heard I was going working in the woods, they were just horrified. But I'm sure I had a better working relationship than a lot of those people did, with perhaps with their bosses. But I think I liked it because it was a challenge to me to show people that I could do it. Mm-hmm. And safety-wise, of course, I think we're all aware of that. I don't know what else. I just like the outdoors.
When you moved on to the bigger places, what were some of the differences with working in a big place and working with Jibbo outfits? Were there differences in...
Yes. In the Jibbo outfits, they had more breakdowns, like the lines would break. You know, they were using not as... they were cutting corners, you might say. And we've had the main line break and come snarling in. If you've ever seen a main line snarling, it just a snaking in like you wouldn't believe it. Just
it's very dangerous, right?
Yeah, it is. Oh, it could cut you right, your head right off. It never happened. But in the bigger, they used heavier, you know, stronger machinery. I think they were more high ballers, as they call it, because they had more pressure put on them to get the logs out, you know. But I could handle that. I'd never had any trouble.
Did you ever try to leave your job as a whistle pack and get training or take on different areas?
Oh, up there? No, because I had no desire to do any of that. I didn't want to do that kind of work. It was hard work. I was getting just the same pay as those guys, and I wasn't going to go and work harder. You know, why should I? I had to work out in the rain, and sometimes you couldn't see hardly for mosquitoes and little no-see-ums. You'd have a branch and waving, and they tried to teach me to smoke because they said if I smoked, it would keep the mosquitoes away, and I tried that, and that made me sick. And they said I should try chewing snooze. Oh, dear. So I tried that. Get drunk. It was awful. Oh, because some of the guys could spit this stuff out of the side of their mouths. It was just unreal. No, I never wanted to do anything different. Boy, I don't know why. When I think about it, I don't know why. Because it was too hard for me.
Did the whistle pump job require physical work at all?
Oh, sure. You had to pack this. You had a big, long, this kind of wire, the old-fashioned kind of wire, like this electrical wire. You got your tape recorder plugged in. And you had, how many feet of that would you have? 300, 400 feet of that? 500 feet of that whistle wire?
Yeah, 300, 400.
And you'd have that draped around your neck, big strings of it. And as you went along, you'd unstring it. And that was heavy around your neck. And you'd be scrambling up these steep side hills and up, you know, over logs and under logs and everywhere, and you had to string this, stringing out the wire, as you say, you know. And then once in a while, you'd have to jump in and pull straw line, which is the line you put back. Oh, it's so complicated, I can't tell you. What? Well, the straw line was what they used to haul the main line out, and they'd start with a haul back, as they call it, and a haul back, and you'd string this wire all through this straw line, all through the blocks and all around, and that's what, when you were making a new setting, that's what you had to do. And that straw line, you'd have to wear leather gloves because that was all sharp little prickly wires on it. It would tear the skin right off your hands. And that's about, I had to pack stuff around too, but they didn't put too much work on me. They were really very good to me.
Were you used to the woods and the forest?
Oh, sure, I grew up here. Yeah, we used to roam the mountains all the time.
So you felt really comfortable?
Oh, sure, no trouble.
The height and climbing.
Oh, no. Yeah. No, that never... I loved it. I really liked it. Yeah, no, that never bothered me. Well, one time I had a nice new pair of corks put in my boots, and the bark was slipping. And I was walking on this log, and of course, these sharp corks pick up the bark will stick to the bottom of your shoes, you see. I stepped on this slippery... Oh, man, I took a nasty fall. You can take some bad falls. I had some doozies, you know, but I never broke any bones or missed any days of work through that. One time, we were working away up there, and there was a fire on the Comox side, and we knew that fire was getting pretty close. Three of them came over the side where we were working, and they said to us, "You better get out of here because our fire's coming right over and going to burn you out." Oh, gosh, we were all upset, so we had to leave everything, and we went out way over on the far side of Mount Hall it was, and we went out into the where it had been logged previously, and sure enough, the fire came over. It blew up burned up our machines, blew up our diesels, and it was what they call crowning. Have you ever heard of this? Well, when it crowns it hits the tops of the trees, and it just jumps and roars like a freight train going through the forest. It's really awful. And of course, everything blew up, and we were just, we weren't hurt because we were out in the slashing, and the fire passed on. And our crummy was out there, too. So we had this great big colored truck driver. We called him Feet because he had enormously large feet. And he took us through the fire. It was burning on each side of us, and we were going down our plank road. And I don't know how we ever got through because by the time I couldn't breathe anymore. Tears were pouring out. I don't know how he drove us through there, but we finally got out.
He drove through?
Yep. Well, we don't know why we didn't blow up, because we were all loaded in this silly thing, yeah. And it was quite a few miles, and there was no air, you see, because the forest was on fire. Like, it had burned. It was burnt, but it was still burning here and there. It was a...
So it was like a corridor of smoke you were going down on either side of the road.
Yeah. Well, it was a plank road, too. Can you imagine? Yeah, it was just, you know, two planks. That's all you drove on in those days. The bridges were just two logs thrown across a ravine, and you just went, oh, my goodness, when I think about it, it was really quite funny. Anyway, we got out of that, and then we didn't work for a few, I guess it was a couple of weeks. We had to get new machines in and diesel up there and everything, and when we went back to work, the whole works of us, it just got black, and it grew right into your eyes, it was under your eyes. And it was awful, because that black stuff comes off the logs. You see, we had to log, still our logs were there, we had to log them off. And after that, there was a little deer used to come, and he'd stay right beside me. It was quite neat, you know? Yeah.
A little deer who from the fire?
Yeah, he was scared, I guess. He'd just come and, yeah, it was a little protected area there, and he'd come and he'd sort of stay there. I guess it was the only green, somehow or another, he had escaped the fire, you know? Because it jumps over to the top, I guess.
Was there a lot of wildlife?
We used to see lots of deer, and those wolves I mentioned before, and a few bear, yeah, when the berries were on. And grouse, just black bear. Mm-hmm. They're not very big. But not too much, because where we're logging, it's pretty noisy and that, and the trees were all knocked down. Yeah, really, it's a shame, you know. And they didn't reforest in those days either, because it's still not grown up there properly, you know.
So it's right up there on that
That's
mountain?
Right there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we used to have floods and wash out the roads, and oh, dear. And the roads were horrendous. They weren't like the roads are now, the logging roads. These were just snaky little roads, you know, because the logging trucks weren't great big things like they are now.
Oh, really? What were they like?
No, they were just like a big truck, that's all. They weren't huge and monsters like they have now, because they would only haul a very small turn. And after the fire, one of our trucks went down there, and it was just a flame, and I guess the log still was on fire, you see, and the wind just got this truck, just the log was just burning like the dickens. We thought he was going to blow up, but I guess he didn't. It would have lose a log churn every once in a while off the back of the truck. The kingpin would slip out, and the whole thing would be lost on the side of the road. You'd have to log it up, you know, go and pick it up afterwards with what they call the cherry picker. And pick the logs. Oh, the logging terms are really neat. Yeah. It took quite a while to learn that, and they always pull the old joke on a new guy, like, go and find a pail full of choker holes. You see, these are the things you dig under the logs, the choker holes, you know, to get the chokers through the other side. And they were always telling the poor old kid to go, and he'd be running all over the place looking for this, or elbow grease, or some, you know, ridiculous stuff. Oh, just, that was a big joke. Actually, loggers are quite, I don't know what to do. They're not too well, not educated, but intellectual, I guess that's the word, some of them. I think they are more now, but in those days they were just big guys with lots of laughs and worked.
What kind of stuff do people talk about?
Oh,